Tora and Ross Toretsky count down the top tens, both the good and the bad, of 2012.
Keeping with the theme of not only WakeUpCallDT.com, but with my company, Dantotora Broadcast Media, LLC, where sports meets life, we're going to do exactly that and take sports where we gave you our top 10 players and plays to forget, as well as the players and plays to remember. We're now bringing you our top 10 TV shows and top 10 movies to not only forget, but also to remember. And that's coming up right here in this Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora special, where sports meets life on WakeUpCallDT.com.
Top 10 TV shows to forget from 2012.
I have to go with the show Whitney. I know some people like this show, but I hate the built-in laugh track with the very fake, phony laughter of the audience. It's an unfunny show, very miserable, unlikable leading actress in Whitney Cummings. I don't mind her show that she created in Two Broke Girls, she's a co-creator on, but to me, Whitney's show, I would have been disappointed if NBC didn't bring this back. They've canceled some other good shows that I like, but this show to me is awful. It's still on somehow. And I got to put that on my list. Whitney, I hate the built-in laughter, and it's not funny. So Whitney has to be number 10 on my list.
My number 10 has to go to a show that's on TNT, Falling Skies. I wanted this show to be better than it was. I liked the idea. I liked that it was kind of like watching Battle LA, but having it on every single week. And I was waiting for it, anxiously anticipating the second season, just to see terrible graphics. And all I saw in commercials were good graphics, state-of-the-art. Spielberg has his name connected to it. So I'm thinking, this is going to be a good show. The graphics are going to get better. The graphics were so cheesy and so bad, like a terrible knockoff movie that you see on the Sci-Fi Channel. It got so bad that I couldn't look past it. I couldn't listen to the characters. I couldn't follow the story because the graphics to me were like a very, very bad video game, and I had to shut it off, and that's why it's my number 10.
Alcatraz on Fox. Some people like this. Cult following, creators are lost behind it. To me, I couldn't stand the show. It got canceled, thankfully, but it was in 2012. Very forgettable show to me. It didn't seem to know what it wanted to be. It was all over the map, and really for me, it didn't really capture my entertainment value. So for me, the big litmus test is, will I go on demand if I miss your show? And for that, it's a definite no. I would not go on demand if I happen to miss an episode. So I'll have to put Alcatraz next on my list.
And you know, Ross, that makes a lot of sense because I thought that same way too. If I miss the show, am I willing to go on demand to see it? And if it is, then obviously it can't be one of the top 10 TV shows for me to forget. Well, this show, even if I wanted to go on demand, I can't because it's one of the few shows that doesn't allow you to see it back unless you go on the internet and look for it there. And that's How I Met Your Mother at number 9 for me. I like this show. I've been following this show, but I'm at a point now where it's too much. It's not funny. It's the same corny thing. I don't see a storyline anymore. It just looks like a bunch of people trying to do one-liners. It's cheesy. It's gotten boring. And if I miss it, I can't go back and watch it because it's not on demand. So there you go, Ross. Even if I wanted to see it, I couldn't. How I Met Your Mother is my number 9.
Gotta be NBC's Up All Night. Two likable people, or actually three likable people, Maya Rudolph, Christina Applegate, and Will Arnett. As the stars of the show is unfunny. And to make matters worse now, they're going to do a transition. Now they're going to go from being unfunny with no laugh track to be unfunny with a laugh track. NBC is deciding that the show's having bad ratings the way it is now. They're going to change the camera angles of it. They're going to change a little bit of the jobs and what people do on the show. And they're going to change now that they're going to build in fake laughter in it as well. It's not funny regardless. I know people can identify, being young parents, with children, a lot of people can identify with it. But you have to at least be funny if you're a sitcom. This is not a drama. It's all so contrived, it's so corny, it's so boring and uninspired. I've seen much better versions of this show, and this one, with all the talent involved, is a major disappointment. Up All Night.
My number 8 has to go to a show on CBS that ran for a long time, and it had a change in character and a change in day. But I realized over time that the young actor that was on the show, when he came out and he said, don't watch this show because morally it's just not right. And he basically said, you know, you have to separate this show. If you worship God, if you believe in God, then you can't really watch this show. Well, I'm someone who believes in God, and God is number one in my life. Now, I've watched Two and a Half Men before. I thought it was funny before, but it started to get very vulgar. And even if I laughed at times, I would sit there sometimes and look at my dad and say, you know, I still don't feel like they should say this on television. I don't feel like it's right. You take the youth and they don't want to go to school. They don't study. They smoke weed. The adult who's a billionaire smokes weed. He's having sex with whatever's around. So that's all the kid's seeing from his uncle and from this guy that's living in the house that's now played by Ashton Kutcher. His other father has problems with women and, you know, mooches off everybody, and then the grandmother doesn't care about anybody and she sleeps around with everybody. So when I look at this show, morality goes way out the window. So Two and a Half Men for me definitely is not a show that I would want on the air. And it's no offense to Chuck Lorre, because he's done a lot of good work. I just think that this show goes too far past the line, and it's too far past its time. It shouldn't be on, and there should be no show on like it that's willing to go that far. I think the humor has definitely gone to a place where it should have stopped a few years back.
I have to go with the show Glee. I'm a big fan of creator of the show, Ryan Murphy. He's done such amazing shows like American Horror Story, and even the new show New Normal on NBC is not bad. This show, to me, Glee is unfunny. It's unwatchable. Lots of weird, horrible music being played, horrible parodies of good songs that they are just destroying. And I know if you're an artist, maybe if you're unknown, it will help you get a foot in the door and you'll get noticed. But to me, it's just so horrible. They butcher the songs, and it's an unfunny mess. It doesn't know what it wants to do. And these people don't even look like they're in high school anymore. These people are like 30-something years old pretending to be 16-year-olds. So for me, Glee is unwatchable. And when I do, and when I am forced to watch it, it is basically is I have to try to shudder like it's a horror film.
I would have to give my next top 10 show to forget to 666 Park Avenue. This is a show that will be forgotten soon. It's on its way. It's being canceled. But to me, it's just that those three numbers, when I see those numbers, even if I see a channel with those numbers, I'm probably not going to watch that channel. Not a big fan of the three sixes put together, not a big fan of this show. I thought for a second maybe I'll watch it, maybe it'll be like Rose Red from Stephen King, which was a couple-part movie that they played on ABC before, but at the end of the day, I never watched it. I'm not about the demonic and what's going on in this hotel. So 666 Park Avenue is off the air, and I think a lot of people would shy away from it just because of those numbers, and the numbers weren't good in ratings, I guess, otherwise, or else it would be on the air.
It's got to be How I Met Your Mother. You had this on your list. Just tell us who the heck the mother is at this point. It's not funny. Contrived. Like I said, you can tell by now, I hate most shows that have laugh tracks in them, because most of the time they're just not funny, so they try to replace the non-funny jokes with just caked, built-in laughter that just makes no sense. And the jokes used to be good. I used to like the camaraderie, the relationship with the whole gang together. It's just stupid, you know, the Robin and Barney and all that stuff, the back and forth, the games they're playing, Ted with all of his problems, and you still have no idea who the heck the mother is. I feel they're just going to show you the mother is at the very last second. The world would have ended on 12/21/2012. We would still not have known. So it just, to me, it's just an embarrassment that they just keep going on. 8 years, it's been too long. And I have a feeling they still might try to squeeze another year or two out of this just because it makes everyone a lot of money. How I Met Your Mother went from, like you, a show that I liked, enjoyed, and now it's on my list of crap shows.
My number six has to go to a show that is another show that's forced, and that is The Neighbors. This is a show that they put on ABC. You put it on after Modern Family for its jump off, because you know a lot of people are watching Modern Family, so you think maybe this show will work. And it's about a family that's living inside of a neighborhood where all these aliens have crashed, and the aliens took human form. And in the first episode, you see what the aliens look like, and they look like a cross between a tiny Godzilla baby and like a piranha fish. It was ridiculous, stupid. I would think with graphics and with the way things are these days, they at least make the aliens look somewhat believable or realistic. It looked like a Saturday morning cartoon on at 9:30 at night. The Neighbors, not a show that I watched after that first time, and I would not want people If they asked me what they should watch that's new on television, I would say to stay away from The Neighbors if it was up to me.
It had to be a show called Unforgettable, a show that's very forgettable, and for now is on a long hiatus and might come back in the summer with Poppy Montgomery, Dylan Walsh, who I liked in The Nip Tuck Show, which is another piece that was created by Ryan Murphy, who does Glee as well. But this show is horrible. It's very forgettable, ironically, for a show called Unforgettable, where the lady could supposedly remember everything from a crime scene, everything she's heard and remembered in her life, except the day there was like a horrific murder of one of her family members. It's a terrible show. I hate it. I wouldn't be that upset if they don't bring it back, but for now it looks like they are going to bring it back in some capacity this summer. Unforgettable. It's just one of those shows that it's just not edgy, and it's just one of those dull book-by-the-numbers show where there's an outline, it's the same thing every week, but they're trying to find out these cases. I'm kind of sick and tired of all these criminal shows, because it's the same thing every week, and there's no spark to it. Usually shows that are on the premium cable channels with the more violence and intrigue have more interesting storylines. The ones on like CBS and NBC that are every 5 seconds trying to find out the next mastermind is just boring, because there's so many of them, and nothing distinguishes themselves from one another.
I would have to give my number 5 on the top 10 shows to forget right at the midpoint here. I would have to go with Catfish, a new show that they put on for a terrible movie that I saw. Normally when you see a bad movie, it's not followed by a TV series, or it's vice versa. It's on television, then they decide to make a movie about it. When I went and saw Catfish, I thought it was supposed to be a horror film. That's what they made it look like. It ended up being a guy who was talking to a girl online who thought that she was somebody and she really was somebody else, and he found out just how scary it is to not know who you're talking to, and he ends up meeting the person and becoming friends with that person and their family, but was upset that it wasn't the girl that he thought it was. Now, we get to follow people every single week on MTV to see whether or not the person they're talking to is really that person. So they could be talking to a girl that's really a man, someone who they think looks one way, looks another way. It's just ridiculous. I think it's like something to destroy the hopes and dreams, and we're watching people have people that they love online turn into people that they don't even know. This is really a very sad story. It's like watching somebody cry and just laughing at them while they do it. I'm not a fan of Catfish. I know that there might be some type of positive they're trying to do with this, and the fact that this guy named Neve is trying to help people because of how his life was affected, but at the same time, it's just a very, very sad story to say, oh, well, is this the person that I really thought it was? Let's find out in this hour-long show today. Not a fan of it.
Number 4, it's got to be the show that's now off the air, but it was on for a few episodes this year on TBS, Partners. There were shows that I've liked a lot better on TBS today. They didn't even give this much of a chance to. That Mad Love show I liked a lot with Jason Biggs, that didn't get much of a serious chance. The Rules of Engagement, they always underestimate, and they always let it just be a replacement show, which I think it will eventually replace this horrible show in February, and they keep undermining that David Spade-led show. But Partners just wasn't funny. David Krumholtz was in Numbers, and Bernard from the Santa Claus movie, Harold and Kumar movies he was in, him partnered with his best friend. They try to have a whole Will and Grace dynamic instead of just being a guy and girl. It was a guy and two guys who were best friends, one was straight, one was gay, and very few episodes were funny. It just didn't really captivate audiences, whether it was me or anyone else. It got canceled. And I think CBS has done a lot better on a big night for comedy on Monday nights than this show. And it went somehow got the audience of How I Met Your Mother, which came on right after How I Met Your Mother, and right before Two Broke Girls, which is a popular show, and it lost almost the entire audience for that half hour. So Partners of the show, very forgettable, and a show that was hard to watch, very, very few laughs along the way.
I'm going to have to give mine to a CBS show that is beyond me and how it's getting the ratings that it's getting. This is a show that I do not find funny. I remember distinctly one part in the show where the girl is standing outside, walking with a horse, talking with a horse, walking toward the screen, and it was just like watching somebody walking with a horse. There was no comedy, there was no event, there was nothing keeping me watching except for the fact that I couldn't believe it was on television. And that is Two Broke Girls. In its second season in 2012, I am extremely surprised that this show has been as successful as it has been. no disrespect to anybody that's on the show or worked on the show, because I'm not against people being successful doing what they love to do. I just am not a fan of the show. I don't find it funny. I don't see anything in it that keeps me laughing. It's got the vulgar humor that maybe some people like, but I just feel like I'm watching a snobby girl and a girl who likes to go against the grain hang out with each other. And if I wanted to do that, I could probably just go to the mall anywhere in America and see that without having to turn it on my television. If you don't have Two Broke Girls on demand, just go to the mall.
My number three is what you just said with Two Broke Girls. Two Broke Girls, horrendous show, gets a ton of ratings, but to me it's a stupid humor. Once again, the built-in laugh track, the talking horse, the over, I would say, perverse, dirty dialogue. And I'm, you know, I like dirty dialogue, but it's just stupid. Every 5 seconds, the sexual innuendos, how scandalous and dirty they make the Kat Dennings, who every 5 seconds is talking about her chest, her private spots. Every 5 seconds, and it seems like there's no joke. It's just talking about her sexual things and what she likes to do. And then the skinny, former rich friend is also aggravating. And just two of them together, a horrible pair, but yet people can't stop watching. So either I'm crazy or it's a Twilight Zone episode, because people seem to love the show, and it's probably going to last another 7 or 8 years, and it would be a very successful show for years to come. But Two Broke Girls, unfunny and just stupid overall.
My number three has to go to another show that centers around women that I really don't understand why it's on the air. There's good television that have women in it. There's good television that have men in it. This one makes no sense to me. And it's my number three, Bad Girls Club. It's on cable, and all it is following around a bunch of women that fight with each other all the time. I mean, I really honestly, I don't know what the premise for the show was. I don't even know how they would define the show in the TV guide. Bad Girls Club literally follows a bunch of people that yell at each other, pull each other's hair, swear at each other, throw things at each other, fighting over men, fighting over who's more popular, who has more money, who's more successful. It's just a bunch of angry women fighting with each other, screaming. And I remember watching one episode where I know that one of my buddies down in Florida used to watch the show, and I sat down with him and I was like, I can't believe that this show's on television. And so I gave it a shot and I sat down and I watched it, and all I remember was like 14 minutes before a commercial of women screaming at each other. It made absolutely no sense to me. And Bad Girls Club is still on in 2012, so it's my number three on top 10 shows to forget of 2012.
It's got to be the show Animal Practice. It was horrible. Luckily, it's over with the premise with this annoying, very unlikable veterinarian doctor, mean to all his coworkers, best friend with a talking, well, not really talking monkey, just a very weird-looking monkey who's in the Hangover movies, just prancing about. And it's just a very stupid premise for a show. They even preempted the Olympics to have a special preview of this while the U.S. Olympians were getting gold medals. And the show was so horrible, unlikable, not funny. And from the very beginning, I'm like, just like the caveman show a few years back on ABC, why is this even being made? Human beings talking to this random animals, and this is supposed to be funny. So to me, Animal Practice, very forgettable and horrible, 2012.
My number two has to be Animal Practice as well, Ross. This is a show that, just hearing about it, you know that it's bad when you refuse to watch it. And Animal Practice was one of those shows. I wasn't surprised that it got canceled, that it only lasted a few episodes. It made absolutely no sense. I mean, it's like spitting in the face of Friends and Seinfeld and all those shows that were on for so many years on NBC, even The Office. Animal Practice was a show that you leave that on the cutting room floor. When somebody comes up with that idea, you slap them and you move on. It's not important. It's not funny. It wasn't going to be funny. And to know that the second character was a monkey in the show that can't talk, but he's kind of just there with the doctor, it makes absolutely no sense. Animal Practice, not a show that I would ever think. Maybe on Animal Planet, it would make sense to do Animal Practice and talk about people helping animals, but to try and do a comedy about it made absolutely no sense.
It's got to be Jersey Shore, which just wrapped up its final episode a couple of days ago. Awful show. It's like a train wreck. At times you watch it just to see the next disaster, stupid decision they're going to make. You know, a lot of it, the storylines seem like they're just fabricated. They're created just to be entertaining, to get ratings. But after a while, even that, even with the producers trying to manage the show and not being true reality TV, it's the same boring stuff. At times, the show got so boring, they would talk about pranks, about bathrooms being clogged and water spilling everywhere, running out of toilet paper. These were actual issues on the show. Like, these were actually storylines, because they started running out of things to talk about. There's only so much party you can do, and then especially the situation got into rehab, was overcoming his problems, and Snooki was having a baby. So a lot of the craziness had to be toned down, because they actually were going to be normal people, not always be on drugs and alcohol every 5 seconds partying. So the show just became uninteresting. It got stupid. It was bad to begin with, but even the interesting, stupid storylines ran out. So I'm pretty relieved that it's over, but a very forgettable show, Jersey Shore. And these are very, just very unlikable people, and they're making $100,000 an episode and are now multimillionaires for their 15 minutes of fame to being losers and talking about GTL, Jim Tan Laundry, and all the other thing, hood rats, and what is it, the fist pounding, grenade whistles. It's all awful, and the Cabs are here. So luckily, Jersey Shore, the final light has dimmed on that show, but that show was awful and highly forgettable for me.
My number one show, and I'm sorry to the children that are listening and to the families that watch this show, but the number one show for me, because I leave my TV on at night sometimes, and when I wake, I'll fall asleep watching George Lopez, because I appreciated that show. So I'll have it on the Nickelodeon channel where George Lopez is on Nick at Night. And when I wake up in the morning, I wake up to Who Lives in a Pineapple Under the Sea. SpongeBob SquarePants is the number one show for me to forget for 2012. It's disgusting, revolting. I don't know what it's supposed to be. There's little children's shows that are supposed to teach kids about numbers and values and morals and how to say different words and how to point to different things, like Dora the Explorer. SpongeBob SquarePants makes absolutely no sense to me. He eats Krabby Patties all day long like he's a crack addict. He needs to have a Krabby Patty all the time. And he will pick out his brain and take a worm out of it, eat the worm, pull something out of his nose. He'll fart and then blow the bubble with the fart. It makes absolutely no sense. It's revolting and disgusting. It's, you know, it's, you're watching a guy who's throwing up all over himself, but he's a sponge, and it's supposed to be funny. And at the end of the day, it really just makes me want to throw up if I ever watch it. So it makes no sense to me, SpongeBob SquarePants. People like it. Adults like it. Kids like it. And I don't see the humor in it at all.
Top 10 TV shows to remember from 2012.
I'm going to go with Boardwalk Empire. If you have HBO, you've got to be watching the show. Just wrapped up its third season. It's a great gangster show about back when there was Prohibition, and this is the 1920s that's going on right now. This past season took place in the year 1923, and just a very entertaining show. And Steve Buscemi, you just seen comedies, with Adam Sandler is the lead. He can be amused at times, but he can also be menacing as a gangster on the boardwalk with all the organized crime. You get to see young crime bosses before they got their start with, a young Al Capone. A lot of interesting stuff. Very entertaining show for the same makers of Sopranos. And Martin Scorsese's involved with it. Mark Wahlberg is involved as a producer. Very good show. You should check it out. Boardwalk Empire is one of my top shows of 2012.
I would have to say at number 10 for me, for shows of 2012 to remember, would be The League. Now, I haven't seen it as much as I had last season, but The League, I just like the premise. I like that it's a bunch of guys who are older, that whether they're in relationships or not, they're still having fun with each other. They have that camaraderie, that friendship, and it's built around this fantasy football league. And being a league commissioner and a team owner for a very long time, probably more than half my life, and running four leagues this season for Dan Tatora Broadcast Media LLC on wakeupcalldt.com, to do that, I know that I want to have that camaraderie, that I want to have a bunch of people together joking and laughing and enjoying themselves, and friends that you build through this fantasy football league. And I've seen that in The League, and so I like it. I like the idea. I like the premise. And I like that it's on FX and that they have a successful comedy that they've been able to put on there.
Got to go with The Office. It's weakened a little bit as the years have gone on, but still it's an enjoyable half hour on Thursday night. About to enter, it's already entered, and it's about to head into the final home stretch of its final season. I'm still always a fan favorite. I still miss Michael Scott with That's What She Said, with Steve Carell, but still very enjoyable with Dwight, Jim, Pam, all those people, and I will miss it. And it's still, even though it's lost a bit of its quality, it's still a very entertaining show and one of the best shows to watch on Thursday night. So The Office is number 9 for me.
My number nine is also The Office. It's a show that, this, you know, it is where it is right now, and shows to remember for me at number nine because it's kind of waning, kind of dying down a little bit. When it started, it was different. You know, Modern Family has taken after it to talk to the screen and having it shot instead of having it shot the way that normal comedies, sitcoms are shot by camera. They shoot them like it's a movie, and you feel like you're sitting on the couch talking with these people or sitting in the office with them. So they were the first to do it, and I really liked it here in America to have The Office. But at this point, without Steve Carell, it just kind of feels like it's getting to a point where it's passing its time. I'd like to see Boy Meets World have stayed on another season. The Office, I kind of feel like, should it stay on? And that's how I felt the last couple of years, is do we need to have it here? I know I'll miss it when it's gone, but it's kind of waning a little bit for me, so that's why it's number nine.
Number eight is a new show that I like a lot on NBC, The Return of Matthew Perry to his NBC Peacock family. Matthew Perry on the show Go On, the show I didn't think was going to work, about a support system with all these people dealing with tragedies, losing loved ones, divorce. It seemed like it would be a sad first show that wouldn't have humor. Surprisingly, it has a lot of humor, has a lot of heart and emotion at the foundation for it. Very likable show. I love all the weird supporting characters. Mr. K is the weird guy with the beard. Very creepy but funny. Everyone's lovable. The weird heavy-set cat lady's funny. It's just an enjoyable show. Matthew Perry's very funny and sarcastic, kind of like a different version of his Chandler Bing character in Friends, but I'm glad to see he's finally successful after the Miss Sunshine debacle, Mr. Sunshine debacle. So Go On, one of my favorite new shows, very likable, relatable, and have a lot of heart and emotion for it. And you even got to see John Cho from the Harold and Kumar movies as his best friend and a guy who works with him at the sports radio station. So it's just very funny, and glad to see Matthew Perry back on top again.
I would have to give my number eight, and this is one that I know that Ross is going to disagree with heavily. I know that they didn't always show the best morals and the best values, but for some reason, I don't know what it is, the only reality show that I'll sit and watch that's outside of, like, vocal shows, because I consider those different. I mean, I know they're reality shows, but it's a specific thing. People are singing in front of you. This, to watch people's lives, I don't watch Survivor. I don't watch The Bachelor. So for me to watch this show, even as an Italian, it doesn't always make sense, but for some odd reason, I have to sit down and I have to watch it, and it's grown on me as Jersey Shore. I know it's over, I know it's done, but it's my number eight and top 10 shows to remember, because to me it was better than The Real World, and there was actually some camaraderie, and yeah, there were fights and people getting drunk and, you know, people doing things, you know, having a girl over and then sending her out. I didn't agree with that stuff. What I do agree with is that they did do a special in restoring the shore, and that there are true Italians on there, like Vinny, who has a big Italian family. So I can find some love for that. I think some of the moments were funny. So it was definitely interesting to watch. And so I have to put it on my top 10 for 2012 to remember, even though I know that Ross will get me for that one.
Pretty good show that not everyone's been watching, but on Fox Tuesday nights, it's Raising Hope. It's in its third season. It didn't grow on me because first season I wasn't a big fan. Last season I really got into it. It's a witty show with the baby, the weird, wacky family. You know, it's a lot of, you know, they joke about white trash family that they go through with the young parents and Jimmy and his situation, how he had the baby, but very funny, endearing. Of course, Leachman as the goofy grandma is hilarious, always making fun of her age and all the crazy things she does. But it's a very funny show, and a cute show that's not, you know, nothing crazy, nothing groundbreaking, but it's a funny half hour, 8 o'clock on Tuesdays on Fox. Raising Hope is the next on my list.
The next one on my list would be The Good Wife. I really like this show. It's different. Julianna Margulies is back on television, and I really like seeing her again. I like the fact that it's a strong woman show, and you know, it's a law show. And for my dad spending, you know, the majority of his life in law, I can respect what he does, which made me sit down and watch the show with him. But I like it. You know, this is a show that I would go back and watch if I missed it, ask my dad what happened in it. It's not a show that I'll see every week, but it's definitely a show that I didn't think that I would like, and I gave it a chance, and I thought it was just going to be about a politician who cheated on his wife, and I was like, wow, big surprise. But at the end of the day, it ended up being a show that has a lot of different wrinkles and different elements, and I like the characters and people taking different jobs and coming back in, and a guy like Alan Cummings, who is the Nightcrawler in X-Men, for him to come in and help out with the campaigns and just see a different side of him and a different character for him to play and an older character for him to play. So it's been a very interesting show early on in its first few seasons, and still on here in 2012 makes my list.
Parks and Recreation, which was a spinoff of The Office, you know, with at least the mockumentary style where they're talking into the camera. Very funny, though. Now it's actually funnier than The Office for the last few seasons, than its fifth season. Amy Poehler, the whole funny cast, Chris Pratt, Adam Scott, Rob Lowe, the guy, Nick Offerman, who plays Ron Swanson's hilarious. It's just a very funny show, very likable. All the leads, it's just great chemistry. They all rag on this heavy-set old guy, Jerry. His name's not even Jerry, it's Gary, but they all call him Jerry. That's much how oblivious that they are, but it's not a mean way either. So Parks and Recreation, a very funny show on NBC. I hope NBC doesn't screw up with this show and they keep it on the air, but definitely should check that out. It's very funny and some real laugh-out-loud moments.
My next would have to be The Voice on NBC. I know that American Idol came first, but The Voice is so different. What I like about it is the fact that they're not watching the singers when they sing. And so you're listening to their voice. You're just hearing them. You're not seeing them. You're not making a judgment call on anything but how they sound. It's not about what they look like or what they're wearing, how tall they are, short they are, whatever it may be. It's about how their voice sounds. And that's what I really like about this show, and the fact that the judges can pick who they want to work with, and if more than one judge turns around, then that person picks. And now you see them with their teams, and there's a bunch of different wrinkles that they added to it. You get to sing with one of your if you made it to the end, you get to sing with one of your favorite performers. So it was really a different type of show and a very exciting show, and it took American Idol and it added so many different elements to it. And I really think with CeeLo Green and Christina Aguilera, with this being their last one, at least for now, it was good to have them on there. CeeLo Green is like this African-American genie. He's just totally different, very funny, and it can take on a bunch of different characters, so it's fun to watch him. But I like that they have, you know, a country guy, that they have a pop guy, a pop princess, and then you have CeeLo Green, who is just this, like, different wild card type of guy. So it was definitely a fun show to watch. I'm not a big fan of Carson Daly, but he talked less than they did, so it made me watch it. I like The Voice, and I like the music that they brought to it. I like that age didn't matter, and I like the wrinkles that they had, so I definitely put it on my list.
Number five, I'll go with The Walking Dead. It's a phenomenon. I know the zombie craze and vampires, it might be getting old to some people, but it's so well done, because besides that it's cool how they even put all the prosthetics on these zombies. Sometimes the most scary thing is not even the zombies in the zombie apocalypse, is that the people who are alive, they're so in survival mode, they'll kill each other, they backstab each other like you even see nowadays. But to see this when it's life or death in an apocalypse situation, very captivating television on AMC. Walking Dead, it's a fan favorite for a lot of people, but it's high on my list. Walking Dead, very entertaining shows, and I can't wait till it comes back for the second half of its season 3 in February.
I would have to say number 5 for me is also another show that's based around singing and trying to find a top performer, and that would be X Factor. Simon Cowell bringing this show that helps start American Idol. X Factor over in England brought the idea to America of American Idol with Simon Cowell. Then he decides to leave American Idol and bring his show to the States. And X Factor, to me, not a huge fan of Demi Lovato being on the show and Britney Spears. However, I do like the show because I like the fact that you can take and put together a group, groups that weren't put together from the beginning. So there was a girl group that was on there, Fifth Harmony, where they had sent all 5 of the girls home and then brought them back as a group. So I like the fact that it's, you know, if you don't succeed, you could still come back on the show. Once again, like The Voice, there's a lot of different wrinkles. The reason why it was number 5 instead of number 6 being ahead of The Voice is because they had a 13-year-old by the last name of Sonnecler, Carly Sonnecler, and this girl at 13 years old had a voice that no matter how old you are, if you have any appreciation for music, you could be a baby, you could be 100 years old. Carly Sinclair, when you listen to her voice, was completely amazing. And me doing music and me having music as my first passion in my life, even before sports, which some people don't know, and now you know now, with singing my entire life, I have a lot of appreciation for watching these shows. I think American Idol is getting a little bit washed up, and I like what X Factor has done. And it's on Fox, too, so it's not hurting American Idol. It's on opposite during the season. They don't conflict with each other. But I just really like the talent this season, and I like that it's different, and I like that there's no age discrimination on X Factor, so it got number five for me.
It's got to be another great drama on AMC. AMC, really, for a small network, has really grown with some great shows. Breaking Bad, it's going to be in its last season. Second half of that show has 8 episodes left, and the entire series will air starting in the summer of 2013 for the final year. It's a great show, very captivating, very addictive. It's all about crystal meth trade, but you also feel for Bryan Cranston, who's the nice, good dad in Malcolm in the Middle. Who knows, he'd play this crazy guy, the shaved-off head, but he's doing this to help his family out because he's dying of terminal cancer, and he's a great chemist, so he's doing this whole crystal meth thing with his former junkie, washed-out chemistry student. It's very entertaining stuff, some very dark humor in it, some very good, cool action. Very addictive. Once you watch one episode, I have all the seasons on DVD. You'll have to keep watching them. Breaking Bad is just one of those shows I'm very interested by. I'm sad to see it's going to go next year, and I can't wait to see what these final eight episodes will bring us and see what the conclusion will be for the great Walter White and his insane show that will be ending. What an amazing 5-year run for Breaking Bad.
For mine, at number 4, it would have to be a drama on CBS, who switched over to drama before any other major broadcast network did, and that's NCIS LA. Not the first one, not the original, but the Los Angeles, with the man who played Robin in the Batman movies, Chris O'Donnell, and LL Cool J. I really like this cast. They also have the older brother of Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen, known for their time on Full House. And I just think it's a really well-put-together show. I didn't see myself watching this naval-based show. I didn't think it would be something that I would like. I'm not a big fan of NCIS, but it's something about Los Angeles, the characters, the connection. I like watching the show. When I miss it, I think about it. My dad's a big fan of the show, so I blame him for getting me into it. NCIS LA has to be on my top 4 here at number 4.
To go with The League, who you had a little bit earlier. League is a great show. I own a couple of seasons of it on DVD. Very entertaining, the camaraderie. These are like grown-up man children. Even the one guy, Kevin's wife, is hilarious. She's a pretty, very pretty, attractive tomboy who's just as good at knowing the fantasy football stuff. And it's talking about fantasy football, but it's not totally bogged down in fantasy football. And some really quirky characters. I love how they razz on each other. They say horrendous insults to each other, but yet they have each other's backs deep down, even though they're very immature grown-ups. But The League is very funny, and I think you'll identify. If you're a big sports fan and you have a group of guy friends or lady friends you hang out with, you could identify with it. Very funny show on Thursday night.
Well, we switched places here, Ross, to talk about a sports-centered comedy, and you had this one earlier, and I have it here at number 3, and that's Go On with Matthew Perry. He's tried a bunch of different shows. He tried Studio 60 on NBC, a drama. It was based around like a Saturday Night Live behind-the-scenes type of show. Didn't work out for him. Then he tries Mr. Sunshine, and I told you just by hearing that intro and seeing the logo for it that it wasn't something that was going to last. It was almost like they were making a joke of it. With Go On, with having Matthew Perry as a sports talk radio show host, I really like that idea. You learn in the first episode that his wife passed away unexpectedly because she was texting, which I thought was a very interesting way to take things, that she was texting while she was driving, which has become an increased problem in society, as if it isn't bad enough with the way that people drive out there, especially during the holiday season. Please don't text when you drive. No texting, tweeting, any of that. Facebook. If you need to use your phone and you have a hands-free where you can, at a stoplight, hit send for somebody's phone number that you want to talk to if you're on a long trip and just put the button here and talk to them, that's fine. But if you have to take your eyes off the road, it's not something worth doing. So if you're at a stoplight, You need to make a phone call. Do that. Have the hands free, but don't be looking down at the phone the entire time, especially as there's ice coming out here in the winter weather. There's snow that's going to be on the ground. It's already here up in central New York, so you definitely don't want to put yourself in a position to harm anybody's life. So I thought it was a very interesting take that they took that and go on. And so you have him in this group of people that all have had something happen to them, and they're working to deal with their problems in therapy, and he's doing this show, and you're seeing his personal life. So all three of these work really well together, and I really like the show. The comedy is there. The Chandler-type character is there, and I'm really happy for Matthew Perry. This is a great show. Every time I miss it, I got to go back and see it. It's definitely there for me on demand, and if not for the other two shows that I'm about to mention, it would be number one.
My number two is a show, another great show on FX that goes on before the league. It just finished its eighth season. It's hysterical. It has the moniker, whether you like it or not, it's Seinfeld on crack. It's basically the same very self-involved, very selfish, scheming gang you would see in Seinfeld, but with a lot more dirtier, insane things they do. They really are delusional, these people, but they're so lovable with Charlie, Dennis, Mac. Frank Reynolds, played by Danny DeVito, the little tiny one, is hysterical. Sweet D, the sister who they always rag on. You got to really check this out. I own all the seasons on DVD. It's always Sunny in Philadelphia. It's hysterical. Almost every episode, I can't think of many bad ones. And it's on FX. It only gets about 12 episodes a year from September to December, just wrapped up. And it's going to enter its ninth season already next year. And just very funny stuff. Almost a show about nothing like Seinfeld, but it just kicks it up a notch about how insane these schemes are every week. But deep down, these guys love each other, as brutally nasty they can be to each other sometimes. But very funny show. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Definitely a guilty pleasure of mine, and used to be number one, but you'll find out very soon what has supplanted it as number one.
My number two has to be a show that every single week I'm going on demand to check it out. Even if I have seen it, I'll go back to it and I'll watch it again. You know a show is good when you'll watch it twice. My number two is The Big Bang Theory. This is a show that I never thought I would like, and I remember in its second season, I was waiting to watch Two and a Half Men, which I liked back in the day a little bit more than I do now, as it's gotten worse, which I talked about earlier. But I'm waiting for Two and a Half Men to come on, so I said, all right, you know what? I'll turn on CBS, there's nothing else on, and I'll just fight through the last 10 minutes of Big Bang Theory. Well, I kind of liked it. Then I found myself giving it another shot, and then another shot. And then all of a sudden, Big Bang Theory in its second season, I'm wanting to watch every episode, getting upset if I miss it, then watching the next season and the next season, having seasons on DVD, going back on demand, when we go into sweeps, going back there and watching rebroadcasts of shows that I've already seen. The Big Bang Theory, one of the only shows that I can watch two or three times over again and still think that it's funny, and that's why it's my number two. But there's another show that not only will I watch on demand, but I'll rush home to go see. And not many people do that anymore with things being on demand, but I will rush home to see this show, and it's coming up very soon, but not before Ross's number one.
Number one is a show that's in its second season. At first, I will be honest, like a lot of men, I watched the show, though it seemed like a chick show. I watched it because I've always been attracted to Zooey Deschanel, but it's become more than that now. It's become a great ensemble comedy, amazing chemistry with the whole gang. You could probably have a show just with the three guy roommates, with Winston, Nick, and Schmidt doing crazy stuff. But it's got to be New Girl in its second season, hysterical show. Every Tuesday night at 9 o'clock, I watch the show. It will put a smile on your face even if you're having a crappy day. And just amazing chemistry with everyone, and a very lovable cast. And I definitely identify with the Nick Miller character, very grumpy, scared to take chances, maybe he's not living up to his potential all the time, but very identifiable, all the characters, and just really funny show, laugh out loud moments. There's funny episodes like the Haunted House one this year, the Fluffer episode, the Santa one they just had for Christmas, really funny stuff. I would advise you guys to watch New Girl. To me, it's kind of on the level of what Friends and Seinfeld used to be. It is taking over as my number one show to watch every single week.
And my top 10 show to remember of 2012 is right there with you, Ross. It is New Girl. This is a show that when I saw the first episode that had Damon Wayans' son, Damon Wayans Jr., in it, because they didn't know whether or not Happy Endings would be staying on ABC, I liked the show. And then in the second episode, all of a sudden, Coach is gone, and Winston takes his place, and I'm thinking, am I going to like this show? I like Damon Wayans Jr. I like watching his comedy. And all of a sudden, he's off the show, but I gave it a chance. I started to watch it. I never knew Winston, Schmidt, or Nick. All those three characters, have never seen those actors before in my life, and every single one of them now, to me, they play their characters so well, and so does Zooey Deschanel, who it makes me forget any movie that she's been in. She plays it, and also Cece. They play all of their roles so well that they just seem like a family. Even when Jane Curtis came on as Zooey Deschanel's mother in this season, in 2012, in the second season of New Girl, you believe that that was actually her mother, because all of these characters play their roles so well that it's not about special guests. It just really is starting to feel like you're watching these people's lives through looking in the window, and that if you bump into them, you expect them to be these people. And I can look at the personalities of Winston, Schmidt, and Nick and see a part of me in all of them. And even my girlfriend will tell me, well, yeah, that thing that Schmidt just did, that's something that you did yesterday. Or what Nick just said is something that I would expect you to say. This show has become a piece of my life, a piece of my household. I feel like they're my friends, and I'd love to live with these people. It wouldn't even be enough to live across from them. I'd have to live in the same apartment with them. And Ross and I have had moments that are similar to New Girl, so we can definitely connect with this show. It's my number one show, and it makes me run home to go see it. And now, before going to the top 10 movies to forget and remember, we'll take a quick step aside and you'll hear from Carvel DeWitt and Carrie and Daily Physical Therapy, and then we're right back at it.
Now that the weather has turned chilly, why not be a hero to your family and friends and treat them to some fresh, handmade ice cream from Carvel DeWitt? Whether it's our ice cream, novelties, or world-famous cakes, we make everything fresh by hand daily. Don't be fooled by the ice cream that you see in the grocery store that could be weeks or months old. Carvel DeWitt is the oldest Carvel in the country and prides itself on making the best, freshest ice cream every single day. Come on in and taste the fresh difference and be a hero to your family and friends. Carvel DeWitt. It's what happy tastes like.
Sometimes we can't help how we get injured, but we can help ourselves in how we get better. Hi, I'm Paula Carey from Carey and Daily Physical Therapy. I'm here on Wake Up Call to tell you that currently in New York State, you can be evaluated by a physical therapist without seeing your physician. Some insurance companies will allow up to 9 visits before a prescription is needed. At Carey and Daily Physical Therapy, our experienced staff will evaluate you and start you on a program appropriate for your injury. We know how important feeling good is to you. Let us help you improve your well-being by coming to see us at one of our 5 locations in upstate New York. Carey and Daily Physical Therapy, where we care about your body and are dedicated to helping you get well.
Find the location nearest you at CareyandDailyPT.com. That's C-A-R-E-Y and D-A-L-E-Y-P-T.com.
Top 10 Movies to Forget from 2012.
Number 10 is the movie Battleship. It's based off the board game, but really did nothing like the board game. I think your battleship, they turn into a cheap knockoff of Transformers, of Crazy Aliens, this time in the water, and just awful. Taylor Kitsch used to do the Friday Night Lights show. Between this and John Carter, was in two massive box office bombs. He's become box office poison as a star, young actor. Battleship, it's not good. Rihanna's in it in her first major movie role. It's just very corny, cheesy, not entertaining, overly long. Tries to be self-important when it's not. They don't really use Liam Neeson from the Taken movies well. They don't really just utilize the talent they have. And it was a movie with massive, big budget, cost over $200 million to make, and it lost a ton of money. Battleship, just not an enjoyable movie. It's got to be number 10 on my list.
My number 10 is a movie that I'm putting it here at number 10 because it's not by far. There's, and you'll know from my list as I move on, there's by far movies that were a lot worse. But this movie I didn't go see because it was just action. I wasn't expecting story, and it's kind of just like doing the movie from before, and that's Wrath of the Titans, with Clash of the Titans coming out a few years before. It just looked like it was going to be the same old song and dance. I know that people go see it if you like a lot of action, but to me, it wasn't a movie, especially the price that movies cost now, to go out and see, because it seemed way too repetitive and just an action movie without really any of a story.
Number nine, I'm going to go with Red Dawn, the remake of the 1984 cult classic with young stars like Charlie Sheen and Tom Powell and Patrick Swayze. Well, this remake was unnecessary. It made no sense. The original one back in the 80s, we had a cold war. We didn't get along with the other superpower in our world, the Soviet Union, the Russians. This one, they've now made the enemy the North Koreans. You know, really, North Korea is a mess. They're a starving country. They don't have the capability to really do anything like this. They were supposed to be going to take over America. And even though it originally was supposed to be China, but at the last second, they didn't want to ruin the whole Chinese base that could go watch this movie from in China, where a lot of the big business comes from. So they decided to make it a country that almost everyone hates universally, North Korea. And it's just, it's a laughable, very stupid movie. It has some decent action scenes, but mostly an idiotic, unnecessary remake that at least the original one, besides having the young stars, had some sense of fear because the Russians at the time were our enemy and they actually had the capability of hurting us. North Korea, it seems pretty laughable how they were going to take us over.
My number nine has to be a movie that I didn't think would be laughable at all. I like him as an actor. I think he's a funny comedian. But this show was just not, this movie was just not going to do it for me, and that's My Boy. It just seemed like a repetitive Adam Sandler comedy. I know, Ross, you're a fan. I know I'm a fan of Adam Sandler, but this just didn't look like it was going to have a lot of comedy to it. It just looked cheesy. There's some comedies that Adam Sandler makes that you're wondering, you know, I hope this costs $15 to make. Because, you know, Andy Samberg being his son, it just, it's not a believable thing. And, you know, he's supposed to be a jerk dad. And it was kind of like Jack and Jill, just not a movie that I thought was worth spending the money on. So I didn't go to see it. I didn't think it was worth it.
Number eight has got to be Think Like a Man. Some people like this. It made a lot of money. I did not like this movie. I just thought it was very cheesy. It was just had a lot of just, you know, stereotypes of men and women, and it just, to me, I just couldn't really get into it. I didn't really like the characters, weren't very likable to me, and the sensation it became, and now there's going to be a sequel, which will probably even be worse, I never was able to fathom why it was so popular. So Think Like a Man is next on my list.
My next one on the list would have to be For a Good Time Call. This is a movie that was based around a girl who is a phone sex operator. It's supposed to be a comedy. Another girl decides, hey, this is a good way to make money to be a phone sex operator. Just doesn't look funny. Once again, like That's My Boy. Just look like a comedy that you're just trying to force some humor. Maybe you'll laugh a little bit, but overall, just not worth the money to go out and see this. For a good time, you should watch a different movie. That would be what I would have to call it.
Number seven has got to be the remake of Total Recall with Colin Farrell, Jessica Biel, and Kate Beckinsale. Wasn't a very good movie. The original one wasn't a masterpiece either, but Arnold Schwarzenegger had the funny voice, the get to the chopper, and it was just, it had his unique charm and comedy. Even the horrendous special effects back in 1990, at least they were funny, they were quirky. This one, the special effects looked better, but it just made it feel like it was a video game you were watching. It wasn't personal, wasn't relatable. And that took away the small charm the original one had and the great Arnold Schwarzenegger impersonations I could do out of it. And it took it away, made it an ultra-serious, unfunny movie that really, for a big blockbuster, it failed to get a lot of money, made very few dollars, and just wasn't enjoyable. And I kept falling asleep, in and out of sleep, for over 2 hours as I kept saying, why did I put myself through this horrible movie?
My number seven would have to be a tie among all of the Possession movies, from The Possession to Sinister to The Devil Inside, all these movies. I understand people wanting to go see movies that are scary and whatever, but I just feel like these movies go too far. It's just this very dark, demonic, there's nothing positive out of it. It's like God can't even help you type of movies, just very sinister, you know? So I guess it does fit the title, but Possession movies, not my cup of tea, not something that I want to go see. So they're on my list for a movie to forget. All of those movies to forget from 2012 are at number seven in a tie for me.
Six. It's got to be a movie that was very popular for some people. It was a very popular book, but I did not like this movie. I would have maybe liked it if it was rated R and they could have shown more violence to it, but really it was cheesy the way they did it. It wasn't very interesting. It was overly long. And the violent message of the movie, where people are, you know, these kids are having a fight to the death to stay alive, and only one could be alive at the end, the Hunger Games movie, and they're going to make two more of them at least. They'll probably break the last movie into a two-part like Twilight and Harry Potter and make even more money. Jennifer Lawrence is likable and all and nice to look at, but the movie is horrible, and I'm not looking forward to the subsequent sequel. So Hunger Games, I was one who just didn't enjoy it, didn't identify with anyone, and was bored by it.
My number six would have to be What to Expect When You're Expecting, because it really wasn't what I expected it to be. This movie, the way that it looked like it was going to be couples, and this whole connection between all the families and these dads, and it was going to be centered around, you know, how these dads' lives are. They only showed the dads a few times in the park. They had this weird man crush on this guy that used to travel all over the world and would do, like, pull-ups and chin-ups in front of them. It made no sense to me. What to expect when you're expecting? Not what I expected. I wouldn't anticipate a lot of people going out and seeing that. I'm just telling you, folks, if you're looking for a good laugh, this really wasn't a movie that got to me. I thought with Cameron Diaz and Jennifer Lopez and Chris Rock that this would be a movie that would really have some good moments in it, and it really was just left by the wayside to me. It just looked like a bunch of scenes connected together from a bunch of movies, and it didn't really feel like there was a constant throughout the movie, so it lost my attention.
Number five, gotta be, I watched two horrible Snow White movies, but it's gotta be the worst of the two, which was the Childlike Mirror Mirror movie with Julia Roberts. It was very boring. I was forced to watch this against my will. I was a hostage watching this movie. I hated it. They try to be, like, you know, whimsical with the singing and dancing and not be as sinister with the evil, you know, Wicked Witch and all that, but it was just awful. I would advise you to avoid Mirror Mirror, even if you are a diehard Julia Roberts fan, or you Pretty Woman fans out there, stay away from this movie. I will tell you, Mirror Mirror is next on my list.
My next one on the list, right here in the middle of the top 10 movies to forget for me, at number 5, is The 5-Year Engagement. This was a movie that I was anticipating to see, really excited to see. My girlfriend and I, we missed it in theaters. We kept trying to make a plan to see it. Then we went out, we rented it, and it was a very depressing movie. It was about cheating and just things not working out and a lot of fights and not being honest with each other and awkward moments. And it just really didn't have the comedy that I thought it had. And every time I see the commercial on television, I feel like they're lying to people and it's some type of propaganda, because the commercial really does make you think that it's a different type of movie than what I thought it was, and that's why it's landed on my movies to forget for 2012.
The next one's got to be the Possession movie. Not all of them combined, which, like you said, are horrible, but the movie called Possession was terrible. It basically took the idea you've seen before, but usually with the Catholic Church, or just with a little kid getting taken over, possessed with the devil, and they have to get the exorcism out. The only difference and wrinkle was that, first of all, it wasn't interesting. It was boring. It was at times funny, unintentionally funny, because of how bad and cheesy it was. And then they added the whole Jewish component, where religious Jews and rabbis had to come in. I'm Jewish myself. I don't find it offensive. I just find it ultra stupid how they were trying to make this into some sort of curse and mix ancient Hebrew teachings and prayers involved with it. Mattis Yahu, I call him the rapping rabbi, who was one of the rabbis, the payers in it, trying to give these prayers to get the demon out. It was just ultra stupid. Even the ending is kind of laughable, kind of like those scary movie spin-off movies that make fun of those movies. It was very cheesy, where there's like a car wreck to get a last-second laugh at the end. It was very bad. The Possession movie, I saw it. It was horrible, and I hated it, and I wish I could get about my 100 minutes that the movie, whatever long it took, I wish I could get that back, but I will never be able to get that.
A movie that I was hoping would be good that you mentioned before, Ross, earlier on in your movies to forget, and it's at number 4 for me, is Battleship. This is a game that I played as a child. I loved the game. It was a lot of fun for me. There wasn't even any reference to it, no joke reference, no "you sunk my battleship," nothing from Liam Neeson, maybe something at the end of the movie where there's one ship left or whatever it may be. This movie was, it was trying to be Transformers and Independence Day. It was and Battle LA. It was trying to put everything together, and it really just wasn't anything. I was hoping that it wasn't going to be that big budget action film with no story, and that's what it ended up becoming. I caught myself almost falling asleep, and at the end of the movie, looked over at my girlfriend, and I was just like, I don't really even know what to say about this movie. It was nothing that I was hoping that it would be, and even the aliens just didn't really seem that powerful. It was like a standoff. It kind of just looked like a war from the past in the ocean. And it just, it didn't keep my attention. And that's why it's number four on my list.
Number three, to me, it's got to be the newest Resident Evil movie. Once again, they're all horrible. They keep making them. The zombie creatures, it's based off a video game, but even a video game would be more interesting than this. It just, it's not appealing at all. And then just the rehash of characters, not scary, not entertaining, not any humorous parts to it. Just an unwatchable movie. So the latest Resident Evil movie, I hope it's the last, but I have a feeling it won't be. Resident Evil is on my list.
This movie, I can't believe I'm even mentioning, was made into a movie. I was hoping the second time around that they would do it right, take it more seriously. But it turns out that I'm hoping that Nicolas Cage was making fun of himself. I'm hoping that this was a joke to him and that he did this on purpose and that he wasn't really trying to act in this movie. Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance was a terrible, terrible movie. All I remember is these weird, like, drug on acid trips that the Ghost Rider would have, and then he would laugh really weird and loud, and it was fake, and it just didn't seem realistic from Nicolas Cage. The movie made absolutely no sense. I thought the entire thing was a joke. I thought at the end of the movie they were going to say, okay, now here's the real movie, and that didn't happen. What I'm happy about is I got to see a private showing for free, so I didn't waste any money on this movie. Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance should have been left on the floor. Shouldn't even have brought it up. And you'd think with all those years in between that they were figuring out a way to do it right, and it was exactly the opposite.
That's my choice for number two, Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance. Another movie against my will. I've been a hostage in a lot of horrible movies. My older brother wanted to see it. He got a sick pleasure of the pretty bad original movie. Thought this would even be better. It is a horrible movie. He basically looks like he's either in on the joke or he's just delusional, crazy. And I think it might be a little bit of both. He's also been filed for bankruptcy, so he needs to make about 100 movies a year just to try to break even because he owes millions of dollars to the IRS for not paying taxes and buying 20 cars and buying death houses for his eventual demise one day. If he buys funeral homes for himself. He just doesn't know what to do with all his money. He keeps spending it all, so he has to do all these horrible movies to make up for it. And this is a guy who's an Academy Award winner, an Oscar winner, from back in the day with Leaving Las Vegas, and no one will ever remember that. They'll just remember all the awful movies he's in. At one point, he's like shouting and making crazy, creepy faces to himself and to other people. He's just, he might be having a ball doing it. He must be having fun doing this. Either that or his soul has been crushed out of his body. But it's an awful movie. Do not watch this one. It makes the first one look like an Oscar winner. That's how much. It makes the first one look like the greatest movie you've ever seen. And I would advise you, please do not watch it, and watch something else for almost 2 hours.
This movie, to me, would make sense for it to be number one, so you know that my number one coming up very soon definitely has to be a movie to forget among all the others. My number two is Young Adult with Charlize Theron. I went to see this movie, and I honestly thought, okay, maybe it won't be the greatest, but maybe it'll be something. And this movie literally was about a girl who is trapped in high school. You know, she's in her late 30s, if not 40 years old, trying to figure out what to do with her life. She's trapped back, wanting her high school days to change. She wants to be with this guy. She goes back. Everything keeps messing up. He's married. She still wants to be with him. She dresses like very slutty, and she thinks, oh, I'm going to get him back. And then she sleeps with this other guy that she doesn't really like. And the movie's just really about her demise, and her demise continues, and it's just that dreary, sad music, sad colors, sad movie. The movie starts with Charlize Theron not knowing what to do with her life, and it ends with her not knowing what to do with her life. So I basically sat for an hour and a half to go nowhere in her life, and that's why Young Adult is on this list.
Number one has got to be, I had to watch this one like I've had to watch all of them because my little sister wanted me to take her, got to be The Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 2. Hopefully this is it for the franchise, even though I'm afraid they'll make more books and make more of them. It is terrible. Even the ending, which is supposed to be a whole twist of an ending where people get their heads ripped off, and then you just find out that that's basically a vision. It's not even real. It's all laughable. And even if they took a chance like that, it was all for naught, because then it's all, oh, no, that didn't really happen. It all ends with a nice, happy message at the end. So it really just is a bad movie. It's a movie that they know these little teeny bopper girls are going to force their parents to take them to see. and made millions and millions of dollars, and it's awful. I've hated all of them, and they've gotten progressively worse. In the last Twilight movie, I had to fight off the urge to sleep. I had to fight off the urge to gouge my eyes out. That's how bad it was, so do not watch it.
The best part of this movie that is my number one is the fact that I got a nice nap through it, and that's Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. I fell asleep in this movie 3 times. I woke up at one point and was so delirious that I woke up talking out loud to the screen. And I have no idea why. I don't know what was happening, but I probably provided people in the movie theater something to watch besides what was on that screen. I remember at one point that one of the actors in the movie, who was actually Commissioner Gordon in The Dark Knight, in The Dark Knight Rises and in The Dark Knight, and then also in Batman Begins and this whole reboot of Batman, Commissioner Gordon's in this movie and he's the lead character. At one point he's looking toward the screen but like off to the corner, and it's 2.5 minutes of him staring forward with music playing of his head. And then I fell asleep and I woke up, and then I was there with my girlfriend. There was somebody that she woke up because she fell asleep too. They were dead in a bathtub, and then they were making phone calls, and the entire movie was really dark, and it was boring, and it was supposed to be about spies, but you don't know who is a spy, and who is the tinker, and what's a tailor, and is there a soldier involved, and then it was like, which soldier's the bad guy? The movie literally just, it made absolutely no sense to me, and I'm not surprised of anything that happened in that movie, because I didn't know what was supposed to surprise me or what was supposed to be normal. It made no sense, and like I said, talking to the screen, I think, sure gave some other people some laughs, and we all needed that in that movie.
Top 10 Movies to Remember from 2012.
Number 10 is a movie a few people saw, but I saw it. It was limited release. It finally came to Scranton, where I live. It's very... very enjoyable movie. It's called Safety Not Guaranteed. You should watch this movie. It has Aubrey Plaza from Parks and Recreation. It has Mark Duplass, who plays Pete in The League. And it has the guy who plays Nick Miller, Jake Johnson from New Girl. He's in it as well. It's very funny and very touching and emotional, actually, for a movie that seemed preposterous about a crazy guy who thinks he can do time travel and wants to come back to the world to fix a moment in his life that he wants to redo, basically has regrets. Don't we all have regrets? It wouldn't be amazing to go back in time and fix things for the better? Or he wants to do it for a specific reason. As the story unfolds, the humor in it, the emotion, the characters, the chemistry, very funny and heartfelt at the same time. Watch Safety Not Guaranteed. It was a pleasant surprise. I'm glad I found this movie and eventually came to my local area so I could see it.
My number 10 would have to be a movie that I would like to place higher. I would place Batman Begins and The Dark Knight higher than this, but the third installment, and unfortunately, you see a lot of thirds drop off, and I don't know why. I feel like the momentum should be there, but for some reason, number 3 in series sometimes falter more often than not. And The Dark Knight Rises, for me, it didn't keep my attention like The Dark Knight did. I liked it. I was obviously excited to see it, knowing what came off of Batman Begins and The Dark Knight, but The Dark Knight Rises, it just, to me, the Catwoman character, I didn't like the costume and the way that Anne Hathaway played the character.
And I think the biggest thing is that what made Dark Knight really amazing was the Joker and the downfall of Harvey Dent becoming Two-Face. Every time those two were on the screen, it was amazing. So whether the story is compelling or not, and it was a final conclusion, it was good. But I agree, and I would have to say probably not having those two bad guys, those two characters were amazing. The Joker, every time he's on screen, you had to watch in The Dark Knight. So I don't think any movie could have lived up to the hype for a final of a conclusion after you saw how great The Dark Knight was and how amazing the bad guy was in The Dark Knight.
And I'd have to agree with you, Ross. You know, my hope was that Two-Face was still alive, that they would find a way to bring him back, have the Riddler. Bane, yeah, he was tough. But to me, it was just, you know, I felt like the story and the flashbacks, it could have been done a different way. Bane was so strong, yet he didn't break Batman. And to me, he could have and he should have. So, you know, you really didn't think that Christian Bale's Batman was going to come out of this movie. And he did, almost because you feel like he had to. but not because it made sense that he would. So I feel like the movie could have been a lot better. I feel like the story could have been better. I mean, yeah, there was a lot of action, but you're right. The Dark Knight was such a wonderful movie and came off of comic books and just really was a good movie, just flat out good movie, not by genre, not by history, not by anything, but because it was just well done, good actors, good cast, good pictures, good story. Everything just really came together in that movie. The Dark Knight Rises, you didn't think would be as good, and obviously the untimely death of Heath Ledger affected, you know, what this series would be moving forward. But I did expect this to be better than it was, and it let me down because it's one of those DVDs where I've picked it up and I put it back down. It was $10, and I thought, maybe I should get it, and then I decided against it. And other movies I would pay the $10 for if they were on sale. So that says something about how I feel about this movie.
Number nine, a movie that you should definitely see, I don't know if you got a chance to, was called End of Watch. Everyone's seen the buddy cop movie before. Not like this, you have it. Jake Gyllenhaal, Michael Pena, who's got a lot of Oscar buzz for Best Supporting Actor. Very good chemistry. You believe these guys were best friends and were partners on the force as cops, police officer partners for years. They just seem like they have amazing instant chemistry. They do the whole gimmicky thing with the whole found footage kind of camera thing. But it works this way, because he's doing a little class on the side while he's going to law school. He's doing a film class. He's filming everything going on as a cop. So you see the film. It's a little shaky, the footage. But it works here, unlike the stupid horror movies, because it's a good story. It's compelling. You really are rooting for these two characters to survive. I'll just let out one thing. The emotional ending, how one of them doesn't survive, is pretty sad and really touching. But it really shows how fearless real-life cops are. And you feel... what the found footage works here is because you feel like you're going along the ride in the squad car with these cops. You feel like you're going with them, and you're a voyeur, and you're getting to go on the trip with them, and you actually feel like you're in danger at times when they're in danger. So it was very compelling, had some nice, funny moments to alleviate the tension. I would advise people to watch End of Watch. I really enjoyed it.
And I would have to say with you, Ross, that not only End of Watch, but another movie, Savages, really did have some good twists in it and good moments in it. They weren't on my top 10, but they were definitely thought of in my top 10. End of Watch was hard for me, seeing the way the movie ended, and I don't want to give away anything for you folks, but it was a very good movie, worth watching. So is Savages, but they didn't make it onto my list. But I do want to say thank you to everyone that were a part of those movies, because it was definitely close for me to put them on here. My number nine is Hunger Games, one that's on your Movies to Forget. Mine's on Movies to Remember. The reason why it's number nine is because of the deaths to these young children, these savage deaths. At one point, one of the big guys is going around, and, you know, this is a guy who is your macho man, jock type of guy who doesn't have any respect, you know, self-involved and self-centered type of guy, and he's hacking away at all these kids, and you just see this blood flying in the beginning. And that was something that stayed with me, where I was like, you know, I understand that this was a book and that this is something that, you know, I mean, definitely I thought was a good movie, but that keeps me from putting it closer to number one because of this child violence that was in the movie. However, I do like what they had in the movie. I do like that they were training kids, that you're representing your place. I did think it was totally different, and that's why it's on my top 10 movies to remember for 2012. And I do like the fact that this movie had the, you know, the government kind of taking over, and that there's this revolution, because I feel like in realistic times, in the world that we live in now, in the America that we live in now, that it's not too far off that the government could turn against the people and that the people could respond. So this movie did have some things that made sense to me, and I liked that it was original, which put it on my list.
I'm going to go with the new James Bond movie, Skyfall. Daniel Craig and Javier Bardem will win an Oscar for No Country for Old Men as a very scary bad guy. Very creepy in this one, almost like a Heath Ledger. We can't take our eyes off him for the limited screen time he's on there as a bad guy. Javier Bardem with the blonde hair, the creepy voice, the mannerisms, everything, the nervous tics is very entertaining. And it's one of the most interesting and best James Bond movies. I'm a big fan of the franchise that I've ever seen. And this is in the 23rd movie. 50 years after the first movie, and it's a very entertaining movie. After a horrible sequel, Quantum of Solace, 4 years ago, you had to wait 4 years, but it was worth the wait. Skyfall was very entertaining, had some witty humor, a lot of action, really cool set pieces, and a movie that I'll probably want to get once it comes to video.
Mine would have to be, for the movies to remember here, standing at number 8, Alex Cross. I'm not a big fan of Tyler Perry's Medea's movies, so I thought, is this going to be believable? Am I going to like him as this character? But Alex Cross, to me, it's you know, a long line of books by James Patterson. This character has been carried throughout a lot of his books, and this is a character that my parents like. You know, they've listened to the books on tape, they've read the books, and so I started to learn about the character, and then I actually listened to part of one of the books on tape, and I thought, I want to see this. I want to see how it's done. And I definitely think, you know, that in this movie, you have your head guy from the show Lost, Matthew Fox, who comes in, he loses a bunch of weight, and he shaves his head, and he has that creepy voice, and he didn't sound like himself at all. If you played the voice and didn't look at the character, you would never think that it was Matthew Fox. So I think he did a great job. The movie had me on the edge of my seat at times. You never knew what was going to happen, and you were really feeling for Alex Cross. Some of the things I knew from the books, some of the things I didn't. So I really like this adaptation, and I hope that they continue to make them. And hats off to Tyler Perry. He really made me believe that he was Alex Cross.
I'm going to go with a movie that a lot of people were fans of, a lot of people weren't fans of, and as insane as it was very interesting. I'm going to go with Abraham Lincoln, The Vampire Hunter. Lincoln is also on my list. The real movie, Daniel Day-Lewis, is going a lot of Oscars. But the Vampire Hunter movie, it took a lot of factual stuff, it kept it as serious as it could, and it had some interesting funny moments, but then it added the whole vampire thing with the whole Confederate Army in the South, which we were, of course, going against, and all the, you know, the racism and all the bad stuff that was going on there during the Civil War. And as crazy as that sounds to mash those genres together, horror, suspense, historical accuracy and fiction, all mixed together, it actually works in this movie. And I'm telling you, if you keep an open mind and not say, oh, this is not realistic, it's not supposed to be realistic. As far as we know, there are no vampires out there, so it's not going to be realistic, but it's as realistic as a movie about vampires that Abraham Lincoln could have been. It's actually very entertaining, action-packed, and the stylized action violence and the set pieces and the slow-motion shots and people hitting each other, the fight. It's from the same director, the Russian director who directed the Wanted movie with James McAvoy and Angelina Jolie. If you like that stylized action, you'll like this movie. I'm going to tell you, Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter surprised me, and that's why it's on my list.
This one's on my list, just like I had TV shows to remember for 2012, because I'm a music man and I appreciate it. Pitch Perfect is my number 7, because of the fact that I really like in this movie, it follows a group of girls that have an a cappella group, and I just love what people could do with their voices. You have good singers in here. There's women that are actresses that I never knew could sing. You have them out there in this movie singing and singing well. You have Rebel Wilson, who is one of those, you know, up-and-coming young comedians, and she was very funny to me as Fat Amy in the movie. And I really liked her character. I liked the music, and I loved being able to listen to people not only make music through singing, but make music through being instruments with their voice. And it's just straight up, it's their voices. That's all it is. Putting the percussion in there, putting guitars in there, putting anything in there to make the beat happen and make it real. And that, to me, it takes a lot to be able to do that. So the movie was funny, and the movie also showed me a lot of people that are very good vocally that I didn't think were. And it showed talent across a lot of different levels here and a lot of different areas, and I really liked it for that respect. Pitch Perfect was a movie for me that I was excited to go see, loving music, and it left me laughing, it left me appreciating. It had some heartfelt moments, had comedy, and had a lot of talent when it comes to music. It reminds me of a show that was on NBC called The Sing-Off, and I was happy to see a movie like that.
That just came out, I saw it the other night, and it's already high on my list. You wouldn't really think of it. It's called Jack Reacher, and it's very entertaining. Tom Cruise, whether you love him or hate him, with the Scientology, the Katie Holmes divorce, and all the crazy antics, jumping on Oprah Winfrey's couch. He's still very good at making action movies. He looks extremely young, like he's a vampire. where he never ages in the Fountain of the Youth. He's 50 years old. He looks like he's maybe 30 years old. He just does such a great job. There's some amazing, really cool action scenes with the car chases. You feel like you're in the car with them. Really funny at times how he's this guy who used to be in the Army, and now he's a drifter, and he's coming by to solve this case. And he just beats the crap out of people in such cool ways, and how he explains it. He tells jokes along the way. If you want a movie that's funny, has action, suspense, it's a really good story, actually. Jack Reacher, and it comes out in the holidays. It has some violence in it. It's not for everyone, but for PG-13, I know a lot of people, it might be too much to handle with a lot of gun stuff. I know what's going on with all the tragedies. But if you just look at it for the movie itself and how suspenseful and entertaining it is, I would advise you guys watch Jack Reacher. It just came out a couple of days ago. I really liked it.
My number six, Ross, is a movie that you had on your top 10 to forget, and that's Think Like a Man. It's a movie that I've seen at least three times, and I really liked it. You know, a lot of these actors and actresses are people that I haven't followed before, but they made me laugh. It kept me involved, and the movie to me just, it was really good. And Steve Harvey, it's an actual book that he wrote, Think Like a Woman, or Act Like a Woman, Think Like a Man. And to see this book when you go out to Barnes & Noble or to any bookstore, and to know that this book is there and that they based the movie off the book and people reading the book, I thought it was a really good premise. I thought the movie was very funny. I like the connection. I'm a huge Kevin Hart fan for comedy, so I like that, and I really just appreciated the movie as a whole because I didn't know what to expect from it, and I came out of there laughing, appreciating it, enjoying it, wanting to buy it, wanting to watch it again. Kevin Hart, I'm happy I got to see you in that movie. One of the shortest comedians out there with one of the biggest abilities to make you laugh. And just a lot of good things in that movie. Funny points in that movie. You got a character in there from 40-year-old Virgin that enters in. So I really thought that the movie had a lot of good wrinkles to it, and it was funny. And when you can make me laugh throughout the movie, that says something to me. And they also had John Legend in the movie for one of his songs. And when you put John Legend in a movie, you got to give it a chance.
Number five, I'm going to go with the actual Lincoln movie itself, not the vampire one, which I already said. But this movie, very good. It might win a lot of Oscars coming up. And Daniel Day-Lewis, really, he really breathes life into these characters. He's a method actor. You really think that this guy is Lincoln, basically. Like, he put it on the clothes, and he's not just a guy playing Lincoln. He just looks so much like him. He has the little mannerisms, the way he walks, the way he acts. Just the little subtleties, the details that he just gets down. He's probably going to win a third Oscar for Best Actor this year. He's amazing. Sally Field is very good in it. It was just in the Spider-Man movie as Aunt May in this recent one. She's very good as the very troubled Mary Todd Lincoln with her mental problems, where she supposedly had some depression problems, and was also very strong-willed. Very good to see the two of them go at each other. And then Tommy Lee Jones, very good. He might get a Supporting Actor nomination. Very good as a congressman fighting to abolish slavery, the 13th Amendment that would ban and make it illegal. It's really, you know the outcome, that they're going to be able to ban slavery, but you're on this thrill ride as they're trying to get all the votes together, and they're having trouble convincing some of the politicians who, at the time, it was a risky move to say you were against slavery. Now, it seems unthinkable that anyone would ever be for it, but it was very interesting, very entertaining, there's a few laughs, but even when there's no laughs, it makes a movie to pass legislation, which you wouldn't think would be an entertaining movie, especially when you're sick after the long presidential election this year. It actually was very compelling, and it's one of the best movies of the year. Lincoln is a must-watch.
And I would agree with you, Ross, but Lincoln isn't at this place for me. It's a little bit higher on my list of 2012, the movies to remember of this year. So I would have to put it this one that you mentioned, Sally Fields, in Lincoln, and also in this movie, The Amazing Spider-Man. This, to me, I didn't know how I was going to feel. They're rebooting the series so quickly. Batman took years. Spider-Man just a few years off, and we're starting all over again. So I didn't know what to expect, and at first I was highly against it, but I gave it a chance. I went to go see it. I saw it in 3D. Even when you don't see it in 3D, I definitely felt like I was part of the movie. And sometimes you're him, but you feel like you're part of his life. And this was taking the movie like how they rebooted the Batman films, and making it a good quality movie. Not a good quality comic book movie just alone like that, but a good quality overall movie where you can call people that didn't read the comic book, don't know the character, think it might be cheesy, that you can get them out to watch this. And that's why I liked it. I think that this way that they're going with Spider-Man, I really like. I thought the character was good. I thought the lizard was great, humanizing him and also making him look like a lizard. So I was very happy. The Green Goblin coming out at the end there, kind of getting that thought that Norman Osborn is going to be a part of the next movie. But I just really liked the way that things were put together. I liked seeing, you know, different characters out there, Michael Douglas in the movie, and then also seeing Sally Fields and seeing them as Aunt May and Uncle Ben. So that was great for me to see. And the movie was just, it was a very pleasant, happy surprise for me. And in all honesty, I think it's my favorite of the four Spider-Man movies that have come out.
Number four to me has got to be the movie Ted. It seemed insane at the time from the Family Guy creator Seth MacFarlane, the idea that a grown man is hanging out with a teddy bear that comes to life. As crazy as it seems, it actually works. It's funny, has a little bit of heartfelt message with the whole Thunder Buddies thing. Besides when they're cursed with the storm, they actually, in a sick way, you know, it's a bear come to life, and as crazy as that sounds, and it would never happen, you actually feel for this bear. The bear is treated like a regular human being. It's hilarious. Lots of standout moments and humor and a lot of funny jokes. Some of it's very offensive, but I like the humor, and it's very good chemistry, actually, for actors who had to talk to something that really wasn't there that they had to put in later on, and the CGI for the bear even makes it look realistic. Very funny stuff, and I think everyone would love to find a Thunder Buddy for life, and it's very funny to sit through for about an hour and 40-minute movie. It doesn't quit with the funny jokes. It's funny throughout. Ted is one of my favorite movies, one of the funniest movies of 2012. It's on my list as high as it is.
I would have to give my number four to a movie that was based on something that happened, a story that was classified and then declassified so that they could make this, and then later on making this movie, not so they could make the movie, but the movie wouldn't have been able to be out there for us to see without it being declassified, and that is Argo. I really like this movie about people that were taken from in Iran, an actual true story where Iranians went and they kidnapped a bunch of Americans, and some of them got through. They go to the Canadian embassy, and just the story of this, I didn't know the true story. I didn't know what happened at the end of it all. So to me, it was like, I expect them all to get out, but I don't know if they will. And I really just like seeing it. And I'm a big fan of Alan Arkin. I love Alan Arkin. So it was great to see him, and you know, the Argo line that he has in the movie. So there was comedy in this movie. And of course, the husband and Roseanne, you see him in this movie. So it was great to see that. And Ben Affleck, who really doesn't get me out to a lot of movies, got, you know, I appreciated his role in this one. I really felt the reality in this one, and I kind of felt like I was going through security with them in the airport. So I commend them for making this movie based on reality. There's one, Zero Dark Thirty, coming out about Osama bin Laden and, you know, finding him and killing him, so that I'll go out and see that one also. But Argo, to me, I waited a while to go see it. I'm happy I did. It's really a good movie, and that's why it's in my top four.
Number three is another funny comedy movie, even funnier than Ted, I found. Surprisingly, it was 21 Jump Street, which came out back in March this year. You didn't think it'd be the best movie in the world. It actually works very well. There's a lot of fun, a lot of great action in the movie, a lot of fun, a lot of humor, and a lot of great chemistry, actually, with a guy who I don't usually like in movies, Channing Tatum, who I consider like Blaine Garrett the Jaguar, the male bimbo. Used to be a male stripper, a backup dancer for Ricky Martin with the Living La Vida Loca. I'm not a fan of his movies like Magic Mike and LaValle and Dear John. I'm not a fan of usually them, but he's actually very funny in an action comedy. Great chemistry with him and Jonah Hill, who's now skinny in this movie. And it has a lot of laugh out loud funny moments, a great cameo with Johnny Depp. You got to see how they reveal Johnny Depp at the end of the movie, who that's how he got famous, you know, he wants to pretend. In real life, he likes to tease the fact that he wanted to be a serious actor, and he became more of like a young teen heartthrob when he was, as a young man, in the movie on the Fox. It was more of a TV drama, a 21 Jump Street TV show. Him and his partner, co-partner in that show, make a hilarious, very entertaining cameo when you finally get to reveal, when they're all in disguise and you reveal at the end. Very good movie, though, and I didn't know, think it would work, but the humor, the action blend very well together, a mixture. Even the idea that it's almost like a John Hughes movie from, like, back in the day, like The Breakfast Club or any of those movies, and what was it, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, movies like that, as crazy as the action and humor was, maybe it was a relatable factor that these guys were going back undercover in high school, and one was very popular in high school, one was not popular at the time, and you actually really identify with that when they actually have to go through that anxiety and nerve-wracking experience of going through high school. Imagine if you guys had to go through high school again, whether you were popular or not, and how scary that would be, and what an amazing opportunity that would be. So it's very funny, very relatable. 21 Jump Street's very high on my list.
My number three is one that, Ross, you referred to before, a little bit earlier on your list, and that would be Lincoln for me, the one that is based on the more realistic approach to Abraham Lincoln and what he did. This movie, I walked into this movie thinking, you know, this is one of those movies that can be a monumental movie in my life that could speak to me. Things that Lincoln said, that he did, the type of person he was, I feel like is an inspiration. And I went to see this movie saying, you know, will I be inspired? And I definitely was coming out of the movie. I like that the Civil War is going on, but the focus is on him, and you get to see the background and his family. And the focus, the main focus with the Civil War going on, is just how much he wants to pass this Emancipation Proclamation. He wants to free slaves, even though the Civil War is going on, and he was willing to free slaves even before ending the war. And I just thought about, after this movie, what, you know, what would they have to do in research, and how long did this movie take to go back and try and talk to relatives and other people? Because obviously these people are gone from this earth, so to go back and try and find papers and try and find people that have written, you know, messages that Lincoln wrote down, or that somebody had, or, you know, if you could find documents from the Senate or documents from the House of Representatives, go back and talk to relatives. It's just amazing to me, not only the movie and the finished product, but what it took for them to put it all together. And Daniel Day-Lewis is amazing. I mean, this man, you know, he brought comedy to Lincoln and these jokes to Lincoln, and that he's a storyteller. And I really, really like this movie. And the more we talk about it, the more I'm going to go see it for a second time. You should definitely go see it, whether you're a history buff or not, or you care about politics or not. This movie really is a movie that can make you stop and think about life in a good way, and that's why it's in my top three.
It's a movie that you had further down on your list, but I actually liked it a lot, even without Heath Ledger as the Joker and Aaron Eckhart as Harvey Dent Toothface. I really like The Dark Knight Rises. It's definitely not as good as The Dark Knight. I think it's better than Batman Begins, the first movie of the trilogy. It's a great movie in my eyes to wrap up the whole trilogy. I really enjoyed it. The twist in the movie with Talia Ghul, you know, Ra's al Ghul, Liam Neeson in the first movie has a cameo. The idea how they were able to do that, where you didn't really expect it, and at the last second, really, literally stabbing him in the back. Very amazing to watch. It's great to watch in terms of the cinematography. If you're a cinephile, like they call the people who are obsessed with movies, which I watch a ton of movies, just how it shot very well. I'm glad it wasn't put in 3D. The gimmick of 3D to make more money. Christopher Nolan's able to make a great movie, whether it's Inception or Batman movies or The Prestige, without any of those gimmicks. It was very well done. I like the acting, even though there's not a ton of Batman in it. A lot of it's Bruce Wayne and struggling, and you were saying trying to survive, and I know in real life maybe he probably wouldn't survive, but he really, to go through all the ups and downs, emotions, losing his money, getting his back broken, trying to get out of that prison, really redeeming himself because he's hated figure. As crazy as a superhero movie would be, that's high on my list. It's not as good as Dark Knight, but it's pretty high up there. I liked it better than The Avengers, because Avengers is a good movie, but it's too much of a cartoony, kiddie movie. What I mean by that, it's very entertaining, but it's cheesy, the graphics are cheesy, the 3D didn't work for me, and the bad guys, these annoying aliens to go with Loki, to me was a cheesy plot device and very easy to kill all these stupid little aliens, these little green beings they don't care about. Very entertaining movie, I like The Avengers, but The Dark Knight Rises I actually enjoyed as a movie overall, not just as the genre, pigeonholing the genre of a comic movie. So I like The Dark Knight Rises. It's a great way to wrap up the trilogy. It comes full circle. It even ends with a way where technically they could keep it going with the guy who could take his place. And I could see that maybe happening. There's rumors that might happen in a Justice League movie. If you're a comic fan, you like the Batman movies, I would think that as much as it didn't quite live up to all the hype and the emotions and all the expectations, which no one's going to live up to these expectations. to me, it was like the expectations you have of Barack Obama or of anything. No one's going to be able to save mankind and humanity. It was not going to be the greatest movie ever, but it's pretty high up there for me. Dark Knight Rises, number two on my list.
My number two is the movie that you said you thought the graphics were cheesy and didn't do it for you, and that's The Avengers. This is a movie that I didn't know if they were going to be able to get it done, and if they were going to do it, if they were going to do it correctly. You have a lot of different actors out here, and these are well-known people for the most part. You got Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man, who is definitely commands a lot to be number one, and you look at a character like him, and then you go throughout and you say, okay, Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow, and then you look at the Hulk character and Mark Ruffalo, who's been involved in a lot of different movies and romantic comedies and a lot of dramas. Is he going to fit in? So as you look throughout this cast, you're thinking, can these people do it? And then you have a character in Chris Evans where he's Captain America now, and it was believable in his movie. But, you know, this is a guy who's in the Human Torch and a bunch of cheesy Fantastic Four movies that a lot of people wrote off and wrote him off. Not only in that movie, but in the movie Cellular. So it was, where is this movie going to stand? Can all these people be on the same stage together? If they're on the same stage together, is it believable? Thor, he's supposed to be this god that's from another planet. How is he going to make sense with the human race? And how is he going to make sense with all these guys who their superpowers make sense? Captain America was in a test. You have the Hulk that was in a test where they're testing different things on the body, and this is what happens as a side effect. And then you look at Iron Man and Tony Stark. He's a very intelligent guy who figures out a way to prevent himself from dying with the help of a scientist, and then with him being as smart as he is, he creates a suit. So three characters make sense. The other ones don't. So how are you going to make this Hulk, or not, how are you going to make this Thor character make sense, and is it going to play together in a movie? I thought it was good. I didn't know with having one bad guy in Loki how good that was going to be, but in all honesty, I'm very proud of the Avengers movie. I like that all the characters could be on the same screen together, and it meant a lot to me that this was a movie out of all the comic book movies that have come out recently that I really, really didn't have a lot of expectation for, and it pleasantly surprised me in what they were able to do.
I totally agree with you, though. As much as I poo-pooed it, it's not that I hated it. I actually really liked it. I own it. I've watched it a few times. It's a great entertaining movie. But the reason why I didn't quite crack my number 10, and it's honorable mention for me, is just because some of the kiddie elements to it were a little too cartoonish and comic booky for me, which was basically the alien things and some of the flying things flying around. To me, and the 3D that they threw in there just to add a little money, to me that turned me off a little bit, but I still love the movie. I love that they brought it to life and all the characters really breathed life in their roles, and they all really fit together, though. I was amazed how they really give each one of them enough screen time, even the smaller ones, the Hawkeye and Black Widow, and then, of course, the main ones, the Hulk, Captain America, Iron Man. You know, Robert Downey Jr. is a master telling funny, witty, one-liner jokes and then beating the crap out of people. Thor had a nice role, and Loki was decent with as well, and Samuel L. Jackson a little bit more as Nick Fury. I really loved how they brought everyone to life, put them on the big screen for the first time ever, and that's what the Justice League is trying to copy with DC Comics. It would be great to see if it can work with Batman and the Superman movie and all that, Wonder Woman, possibly Green Lantern, but I don't think we'll live up to high enough what Marvel, what they did over all those years and those stingers at the end of the movies, the little sneak peeks to really get you hyped up for the next movie, to get you ready for Avengers. I really love how it really came together, and Avengers is a very entertaining movie. It's just too much, there's too many kiddie elements for me to put it that high in my list. That's the only reason why I put it down a little bit, but I still really like the movie. Number one for me is one you had earlier on the list. It's got to be Argo. Argo, F yourself. That's the best way I can say. I can't say the full one. But Argo was a very entertaining movie. Ben Affleck, what really has helped his career out is he started to direct and write his movies. Gone Baby Gone was very good. And that one, he got his brother, Casey Affleck, to do the star of it. But these last two movies he's directed, he even wrote the Town as well. The Town, very good gangster movie. With them Robin Banks, very powerful movie that he directed and wrote with him and Jeremy Renner from 2 years ago. The Town was very good. And now this movie, Argo, is in a class of itself. I would love to see this movie win Best Picture. I think between this, the Lincoln movie, and the new Zero Dark Thirty, the one about the manhunt for Osama bin Laden, those were like the premier movies to have a chance to win Best Picture this year. And this one was very good. Had some humorous moments, very tense moments. Even though you know they're gonna make it out of there, you're really on. When they're in that airport trying to get through customs and they're asking these questions in the foreign language, and trying to get out of Iran with the whole hostage situation, you really are in fear for them. You really are rooting for them. You're hoping they can make out alive. They've been getting, their plane is getting chased down by these guys who wanted to, you want to shoot them, get them off the plane and all that. You're really, to the last second, it's nail-biting action, but it's really a suspenseful movie. Very good, well done, the story of it. Nice, well alleviated moments of comedy between John Goodman and Alan Arkin, who's very good. And just a very powerful movie, very powerful message, how this was, it was classified and then released now, a few years ago, and now this movie being made. And really makes Jimmy Carter, a lot of people made fun of him as a president, that he didn't know what he was doing with the whole Iran hostage crisis situation. It really puts him in a favorable light, that he gave the go-ahead to this mission, but he couldn't take credit for it for all these years. Maybe that's why he didn't get reelected back in 1980, because at the time it was sensitive, classified information that he couldn't reveal that he gave the go-ahead to this mission. They actually give credit to our nearby neighbors to North Canada, when really the United States had a lot to do with it. So, very entertaining movie. And Ben Affleck, what has saved his acting career, he's not the greatest of actors, but he's good enough, is when he actually writes and directs his own material. He's become very good at it, and he says his role model's become the next Clint Eastwood, minus the crazy talking to the chair part. But what Clint Eastwood was great at, especially as he got older, being behind the camera as a director, even when he gets too old to be the star of the movie, Ben Affleck has made a great career move by actually directing these movies, and it's a very powerful, suspenseful movie, and it will keep you on the edge of your seat, even if you know what the outcome of the movie will be. Argo is number one, and I would love to see it win the Oscar for Best Picture.
My number one is a movie that you didn't have on your list, Ross, but this movie, I really, honestly, I expected nothing from this movie. I went to go see it. My cousin wanted to go see it, and I said, okay, I'll go. I even forgot what the movie was about because I didn't put the title to the preview that I had seen and didn't connect two and two. So I walked into the movie knowing very little about it, not even really knowing what I was going to see, and I sit down to watch a movie about making moonshine during Prohibition, Shia LaBeouf and Tom Hardy inside of the movie Lawless. And this movie, to me, was my biggest unexpected thriller. It kept me on the edge of my seat. It kept me involved. This is not a movie that you fall asleep in. I thought that this was a movie that maybe I see it, maybe I don't. Maybe if I'm bored one day, I watch it on a movie channel. I went to go see
this movie.
Good.
And what about Guy Pearce as the creepy bad guy with the shaved eyebrows off and very creepy and very scary as a bad guy with his bow ties and all that? They said he was wearing women's perfume. He's very, very entertaining as the bad guy, Guy Pearce.
Yeah, Guy Pearce played a great role here as Charlie Rakes. And, you know, when he comes in and the way that he played, I mean, you were so angry. And me as a nonviolent person, I'm watching the movie, so I know it's not real, but you get so involved in the movie. So, you know, as it goes on, as Rakes keeps doing what he's doing, you want the Bondurant boys, who Shia LaBeouf, Tom Hardy, and Jason Clark all played in. You wanted those guys to get him. And then, you know, you see in the movie what he does to one of the characters that's close to Shia LaBeouf, and you're just waiting for this guy. You can, like, taste it. You can feel it. You feel like you're part of the family. And that's what I really felt. I felt like I was Shia's brother, Tom Hardy's brother, and he plays Forrest Bondurant, who makes this moonshine. He's the leader of this. He gets through so many different, you know, problems in the movie, is on his deathbed numerous times in the movie, and they do flashbacks in the movie. I really, really like this movie, and it was great to see there's the mafia guys, and then you see that there's these country folk, and everybody's coming together, and then the big city people. So you're seeing three different types of society start to bond, and you think back to, you know, what were times really like, and is this how the world was, where everybody functioned differently before they were all included together? And I really just love following the story and saying, you know, how much of this is historical? How much of this, you know, did they put into it?
Only some of it's accurate, because it's based on a true story. I don't know how much liberty they took in the story, but supposedly the Shia LaBeouf character in the movie, his grandson, who's one of the Bondurant descendants, actually wrote the book that the movie was based on, and wrote the screenplay for the movie as well. So is actually, it's supposed to be a decent amount based on reality, even though they said some of it has become legendary status in Tall Tales, especially with the Tom Hardy character, who just was able to seem to be indestructible. He gets throat cut in the movie, he gets shot numerous times and survives. So some of that stuff could have just been stories that turned into legend, kind of stuff we see in the Bible sometimes, other stories that we've seen from ancient times. But it's actually very compelling with the whole Prohibition era. And I think if you like that movie, Boardwalk Empire, going back to the shows we like, that show has a lot of that feel of this movie. But I definitely like where your head's at with this movie.
Yep, Lawless is my number one. And that does it for our top 10 special on Wake Up Call with Dan Totora. Here you saw where sports meets life. We took a look at the top 10 TV shows to forget and remember and the top 10 movies to forget and remember of 2012. Before this, in our other Wake Up Call with Dan Totora special, Ross Turetsky and myself, Dan Totora, took a look at the top 10 players to forget and top 10 players to remember, as well as the top 10 plays to forget and remember of 2012. This is our look at the top 10 to remember the year 2012, and we appreciate you listening in. Ross, as always, it's a pleasure to talk with you. Happy to bring you this special to each of you listening here. And Ross, happy 2012, and a very early happy 2013.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be on with you. Trip down memory lane. It was very nice to talk about the memorable and not so memorable moments. Either way, it made up a very interesting 2012. We survived the Mayan calendar doomsday scenario. There'll be a 2013, it looks like, just a few days ago. So hopefully you have great holidays. Enjoy Christmas, Hanukkah that just passed, and a happy new year as we enter 2013, which I'm sure will have a lot more great and maybe not so great memorable moments to come. But either way, it makes life interesting. I'm glad we will, as a group and as a pair, share that with the audience out there today. And hopefully you guys enjoy our choices. And if not, if you like our choices or you have different choices that you want to talk to us about, hit us up on the website and you tell us your thoughts about top shows, top movies, top plays, top players to forget, great moments in sports. You tell us your list and you can share, compare with us, and we can get back to you on how we can compare one another of what we think is what the best and what you think is the best. We'd love to hear from you guys.
This is the Time Capsule Show for 2012. I'd like to thank Dry Sig Apparel, Carrion Daily Physical Therapy, FanHands.com, Woody's Jerkwater Pub and Grub. Also would like to thank the Syracuse Silver Knights and Carvel DeWitt, all proud sponsors, part of the family at WakeUpCallDT.com and Dan Tortora Broadcast Media LLC. Part of my family and part of your family and always there for you. Make sure you become a part of Hands to Answer the Call with FanHands.com and I to raise money for those affected by Hurricane Sandy. You buy a pair of fan hands and you get something to go to the game with, and they have something to help them rebuild. Hands to Answer the Call, find it on the Fan Corner page, and find me once again on Facebook and Twitter. God bless, I appreciate it, and have a truly, truly wonderful day. And send over your picks for top plays, top players, top movies, top TV shows, and of course the ones that you'd like to forget for 2012. Whenever it comes to what you have to say, I appreciate your opinions. As long as you justify them and bring them over to me in a respectful manner, we're happy to always have them here on the show and with the company. You can get our top 10s at any time here on WakeUpCallDT.com. And as Ross said, share your top 10s to remember and top 10 to forget right here with us on any social media that's connected to WakeUpCallDT.com. Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora's Facebook page that you can get very easily by going to facebook.com/WakeUpCallDT. D as in Dan, T as in Thomas. Or you could go on Twitter at CallDT. That's at CallDT. You also want to check out Ross Turetsky when you get an opportunity on Facebook, DJ Roscoe, R-O-S-C-O-E Productions. Go ahead and catch him over there. Not only his comedy, but also sports that he covers outside of WakeUpCallDT.com and the shows that he does. Ross, it's a pleasure. To everyone listening, it's been a pleasure as well. Listen here to the show. Listen back for your favorite moments. And always make sure you're listening to WakeUpCallDT.com. God bless. Happy 2012. And happy 2013 to each of you.